So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Way.
Steiner's got to fight for his life. Oh, he better develop his move. He's got a move in there. He better develop it. What strength by Rick Steiner. He's trying to hook Abdullah. The crowd here going crazy in the opening moments of Halloween Havoc. Cactus Jack, he thinks Steiner's in there, but it's Abdullah. Cactus Jack thought it was Rick Steiner, but Abdullah, my gosh. Think about what he's experiencing.
He's getting cooked. And I think he's well done, guys.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting with you. Wei, how are things going today?
Things are okay. Things are fine.
Man. You are a busy man today.
I'm just so... it's just a standard Monday. But, man, I'm just pretty tired.
From what?
Well, from the past few days. Especially that episode of Raw. Jesus.
Oh, yeah, Monday night. Well, it's 3 hours, Wei. You kind of know what you're getting yourself into.
Right, yeah. Anyway, I don't want to complain. We complain enough about pro wrestling on this show. I don't want to complain about my life, too.
Do you want to hear something funny?
Okay.
All right. I got my visa bill in the mail on the weekend.
Uh-oh.
Why do you assume uh-oh? Maybe they were saying, Sean Pollock, here's money. Here's some free credit.
No, these stories never turn out well.
Well, I saw a mysterious fee on my bill. For $33. It's like, that's strange. Didn't spend $33 at this place. And did some investigations, and I had signed up for this thing with a limited trial. And it had stated in the language, your trial membership will automatically expire after 3 days. And I assume that meant that it was a simple trial and then everything is canceled with. No, apparently I had to opt out of this, and I missed this on my bill last month. Got hit for it again this past month. And now Vivid Entertainment has gotten $70 out of me for that Queen of the Ring debacle.
Oh, no.
I'm fucked. I had to pay $70.
You had a $70 porn bill.
So, folks, if you are out there and you want to get the 3-day trial on Vivid, you have to cancel it.
That's how they hook you.
It's terrible. It's very misleading, the language that they have on their site. I read it, and...
You know what? That's why you should always just steal porn. Come on. Wrestling is one thing, but porn, you don't need to pay for that. Smut.
So there you go. A very expensive edition of Review Away.
Oh, that's terrible. I feel bad for you.
No, you don't.
I feel bad that you paid $70 for that. For that torture.
Well, you know, everything evens out in life. I feel maybe some good luck will come to me now.
Maybe you'll end up making money from porn one day.
Probably not, I would assume.
The industry owes you money. That's how I see it.
Wei, you and I both watched the video this morning. Of a big fight in downtown Toronto.
Are we going to talk about this?
That's why I was bringing it up.
Oh, man. I wanted not to talk about it because my buddy... Well, you go ahead with the story.
Oh, was someone you know there?
No, I just don't... I am embarrassed for the people in this video, and therefore I didn't want to bring any attention to it.
Well, it's got over 250,000 views on YouTube right now, and every outlet in Toronto has picked it up.
Yeah. All right. So what happened?
Well, I just tie this in because, Wei, you and I went for pho on Friday night after Robin Black's show in downtown Toronto.
Yeah.
And I guess this was on a Saturday night.
Yeah, one of the Halloween weekend nights.
Did you recognize where this was in Toronto?
This was another pho place, I imagine, on the same block where we were at.
But really?
Yeah. This would have been Toronto.
Because they said Toronto. I didn't know where.
Oh, it would have been one of those.
Well...
Pho, by the way. It's pho.
I know it's pho, but there's an O It makes no sense.
With an accent, and it's Vietnamese.
There's no accent on it, though.
Yeah, there is.
They don't put an accent on it.
They're supposed to be.
One of those, what's supposed to be on it? One of those,
Umlauts or something like
that. Exante gu.
I have no idea. Listen, like, when you're dealing with accents, every language uses these accents differently. Like, in Chinese, they use accents completely differently when you change it to English. But I know it's pho. And the reason I know it's pho is because I watched an episode of Pimp My Ride where this Vietnamese girl got her ride pimped, and she was wearing a shirt as she was getting into her new car. The shirt said, "What the pho?" Like with pho on the accent.
Fuzz before foes.
What?
I don't know. I was trying for a bros before hoes kind
okay.
of tie in there.
So what happened in this video, John?
Well, a group of people got into a big disagreement. It looked like two girls were getting into an argument.
A group of Asian people.
That's not part of the story.
Well, of course it is.
Well, you're bringing that up here. Is that why you feel embarrassed?
That's partly the
representation on you.
Absolutely.
I don't think you can characterize a group of people based on a fight. I mean, lots of white folks get into fights all the time.
Yes, but, you know, looking at the YouTube comments and everything, there are people that do, unfortunately, generalize that way.
Well, that's terrible.
Of course it is.
It's not fair at all. They got into this fight. The guys that were with them, they got involved as well. And some dude threw a plate across the restaurant and hit this girl in the face. And they put this in slow motion. This looked just absolutely brutal as she probably yelled, "Oh, fuck." P-H-A-C-K. And yeah, this guy got this on his camera phone, and this thing is just a mess.
You know what? Who the biggest idiots are? There's probably more than one video of this happening. And the one that I saw, the biggest idiots in all this was, thanks to my cameraman Andrew. I don't know the name. Thank you to my cameraman Andrew Douglas for filming this. And this is all brought to you by me. Like people taking credit for this thing. There's some idiots out there on the internet.
Well, talk about like incriminating evidence, though. You got to imagine charges are going to be filed here, and this is all documented.
I hope so. And you know what? Nobody's really generalizing here, but like, I think I'm personally just so bothered by it because I know people like this. I know so many people like this, and I just. It's they're douchebags basically. They're the Asian version of the Jersey Shore.
Well, it was listen, fights happen, but man, when you start throwing plates at people and using weapons,
and they're just slipping all over the broth.
Jesus Christ. And if you watch the one video in like the bottom left corner, there is like a little child that the parent is just like shielding from.
Yeah.
Really horrible.
It is fucked. It's sad. It's sad to see the people cheering on them. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. It's ridiculous.
Oh shit. Oh shit. Halloween Havoc, 1991. Sunday, October the 27th of 1991.
Yeah.
You know who was tweeting about this event this past weekend?
Who?
Paul Heyman.
Oh.
He's just randomly tweeting about 21 years ago today, welcoming Rick Rude into the Dangerous Alliance.
Hmm.
Well. So, Paul Heyman, clearly listening.
Clearly, yeah. Well, come on, he was involved in this Ryback angle this past week, and probably he was doing some research listening to our review of Nitro last week.
It's probably, all right, John and Wei really bring up some great points on this podcast. How can we maximize Ryback so that we get a bit of return like they did on Goldberg 14 years ago?
Well, maybe he wasn't listening, because what they ended up doing...
Heel ref finish. That's the way to go.
Yeah,
whatever. We discussed this so lengthy on Monday.
Yeah, we did.
We don't have to continue now. I don't think it was the worst thing in the world. Certainly wasn't the best thing in the world.
Yeah, well, I predicted that they would do something like this, but whatever.
This showway was a horrendous time in WCW history. Ric Flair had just left the company. WCW was like performing in the shadow of Ric Flair. All these arenas, they featured like We Want Flair chants. This was when Jim Herd was booking the company. Mm. I would argue this period and like 2000 WCW were probably the lowest points of this company's history. This was a pretty horrific time in WCW. And this pay-per-view, which apparently was a pay-per-view, despite the match layouts here we got, and some of these characters, Way, I mean, I had never seen this event before. I assume you have not either.
I have not. I was not watching wrestling at this time. But you know what?
No, neither was I.
I have heard of a lot of these participants, namely from WrestleCraft.
WrestleCraft. This was the WrestleCraft Hall of Fame here in action tonight. Oh, my God. from Chattanooga, Tennessee at the UTC Arena.
Okay.
A far cry from years later where this event would be at the MGM Grand Garden Arena.
Yeah. What is the capacity in this Chattanooga, Tennessee stadium?
Well, this
what's the capacity of this town?
Well, the WWE has actually run pay-per-views in this arena. They ran one back in 97. This looked like, you know, you're kind of this looked like kind of the Ricoh Coliseum in Toronto.
Okay.
It held a few thousand. It looked full on TV at least.
It looked
so
fun.
That's good. I guarantee they didn't maybe they did. Who knows? Speculating.
Well, come on. You have the Chamber of Horrors.
Well, that was a big draw. Big gimmick match.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of the pre-show?
I know I want my journalistic integrity told me to, but I did not. I couldn't.
Well, I was guilted into watching this. I had to for the sake of our listeners.
What happened?
Well, we got a pre-show with a campy montage of promos, and this was hosted by Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, plugging Lex Luger as the high-tech world heavyweight champion. And I thought, wow, maybe he just had a weird flub of describing him and just used a poor choice of words. It happens. But then they show Ron Simmons working out at the YMCA preparing for his match, and Schiavone once again reiterates that Lex Luger is WCW's version of the high-tech man.
Huh.
The high-tech man.
And did they show Luger working out?
No, they did not.
They didn't show him working out with, like, robots?
No, he was not, I don't know.
He's the high-tech man.
The high-tech man. I don't even know what that means.
He's like the bionic man.
So he's on steroids.
That's not high-tech.
That's for the time, maybe.
I suppose so, yeah.
It's maybe technology. That's it.
Yeah, he's the guy on steroids.
They showed some vignettes of Paul Heyman and Missy Hyatt going from New Jersey to L.A. to Dallas, trying to find the Chamber of Horrors and where it was being built to find out what kind of matches it is. And
So they don't even know.
They don't know, and that was the selling point that Schiavone and Ross reiterated was, tune in, we don't know what this match is going to be.
Oh, everybody's going to be in for a huge surprise.
And they also hired Elvira to do all the promos for Chamber of Horrors. They cut all these commercials with Elvira talking about the Chamber of Horrors came from her mind.
Elvira? Who is
Elvira,
this?
Elvira.
Who is this? Some 80s celebrity?
Celebrity would be generous.
Mistress of the Dark.
Yes.
Elvira.
Yeah. Is, WrestleMania 2.
1988.
With Jesse Ventura on Gorilla.
1988 comedy horror film.
Okay, well, this was in 1991. If you Google this woman, she looks identical today as she did in 1991.
Oh, yeah, she looks great. She looks great with the makeup, actually.
Good for her. And then we got a promo from Dustin Rhodes, which was hilarious because you could tell they told him, talk like your dad.
Mm.
And it was a very different version of Dustin Rhodes than we're used to promo-wise.
They were saying this was his first year in WCW.
Yes, it was. He had actually been in WWF prior to this.
Oh, is that right?
Very brief run.
He was only 21 at this time.
Wow. Yeah, very young at this point. And then we go on to the actual pay-per-view and the opening Way. They had like this campy graveyard, like wall or whatever it was.
Graveyard wall?
Well, like, it was like the animation that they had where the pictures all come through. Then we go inside of a haunted house into the arena, and Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone are our commentary team. This was after Schiavone had left the company, gone to the WWF for a year, didn't like all the travel and stuff, and then came back here to work with Jim Ross. Hmm. I did not enjoy these two together.
I thought Jim Ross was really good, and Schiavone...
There were times Schiavone was just like, he had this look on his face like, the fuck am I doing here?
Well, I just...
Ross out of here. Like, these two had problems. They were after each other's job.
Well, I was going to say, you could tell that they didn't necessarily like each other.
Yep. That really came across to me as well. They announced... This show was littered with injuries. If you look up the matches advertised and what were delivered, they had like 4 or 5 injuries that fucked up this entire card. Barry Windham was supposed to be on the show, but they shot an angle with him where he arrived with Dustin Rhodes in their convertible.
They basically showed a scene where everybody, all these tag teams, would arrive in their cars.
With Eric Bischoff just standing out there waiting for them to arrive.
Yeah, Mick Foley and Abdullah the Butcher came out in a car. DDP and Scott Hall came out in another car.
And then Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes show up, and... they get attacked by the enforcers. Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko, who attack him and shut the door on Wyndham's arm.
Yeah, which looked good. How do you work something like that? Just shut the door on the guy's arm.
Have you ever had a door shut on you?
Almost, but no.
It depends where you could hit it, but there's a way to do it where it really isn't. It'd be like a normal door being shut on you.
A car door travels at a much greater velocity.
They're not full out slamming the door here.
It looked pretty good.
Well, maybe they put some padding on it.
Maybe.
Well, anyway, they shut it on his arm, and then Dustin Rhodes put him into the passenger seat and drove him to the hospital.
Yeah,
they drove off.
We gotta go to the hospital right away. I mean, shouldn't there be medics at the arena?
No update. No. The Halloween Havoc set in the arena, I thought I was watching a high school play. This is how cheesy this looked. This was 1991 WCW production values.
It felt like a high
school. Like it had streamers and like shiny lettering and graves with pun names on it.
It felt like a high school Halloween dance.
It was.
Complete with the outfits.
Gary Michael Capetta then explains the Chamber of Horrors match to us. And Gary, tell us about the rules of said match.
The first contest of Halloween Havoc from Chattanooga, Tennessee is the Chamber of Horrors. This special attraction will involve 2 teams, each team consisting of 4 team members. The match will be confined to the Chamber of Horrors, which is equipped with several instruments of torture. The object of the match is to put a member of the opposing team in the Chamber of Horrors chair of torture, and then to pull the fatal lever, which will render one of the teammates helpless. And now, the participants in our electrifying first contest.
Yes, the electrifying contest involving the lethal lever.
Yeah.
Wait, what did you think when you heard this?
I wasn't even exactly sure what he meant until I actually saw it take place. An electric chair comes down from the ring, and you're supposed to strap your opponent in it and then pull down the lever. So the goal of this match is to essentially murder your opponent.
You must kill a man
to
win.
Might have been quite
opening match of the night.
Might have been quite the surprise for these people who didn't know what this match was supposed to be. They didn't prepare their insurance, their wills.
So here is our lineup of champions. We had as he was pronounced on the show, El Gigante.
They gave it
a silent G.
Okay.
Sting and the Steiner Brothers against Big Van Vader, who was a substitute in this match, the Diamond Stud Scott Hall, Cactus Jack, and Abdullah the Butcher.
Quite the cast. Quite the all-star cast. That's one thing about watching this show. You get to see a number of legends in the industry in their earlier incarnations, like the Diamond Stud.
A gimmick that just won't be fondly remembered in the Scott Hall legacy, I don't think.
The Outsider's not really a memorable performance for either of them on this show.
Cactus Jack, borrowing from Leatherface here, came out with a chainsaw.
Cool.
Steiner's got a very good reaction, as did Sting, who was the United States champion at this time. No rules here until someone puts them into the electric chair and pulls the lever. Can't do one without the other to win the match. And Sting grabs a kendo stick. There were coffins way inside of the cage that you could use on people. Actual coffins. Vader's mask came off very early. There was a great comment here, as Jim Ross said, This is like a battle royal without pins or submissions. Right as Sting does a plancha over the top rope to the floor, just emphasizing this is absolutely nothing like a battle royal. Nothing like this at all resembled a battle royal. Mm-hmm. If the straitjacket and the chair and the lever and the chainsaws and coffins weren't enough gimmicks, we also had the referee camera that Nick Patrick wore with a hockey helmet.
Yeah.
What did you think of the referee camera?
This must have been some amazing technology at the time.
This was high tech.
This was before the Pride came, before... I don't know any other place that would have employed something like this.
The UFC tried this recently on Fox, where it was... on a guy's, like, a button on his shirt, on the referee's button.
Well,
I've never liked this stupid first-person perspective.
It's very pointless oftentimes because it's always shaky. The camera's a lower-quality camera because it has to be portable. And in this, it was kind of neat. It was kind of neat, but they didn't really stick with it throughout the entire night, nor should they have, because it honestly didn't really add too much to it. It really just made, like, the referee just, it looked like the referee was wearing a hockey helmet. It looked like Nick Patrick was a special needs kid.
Then the ghouls came out. Do you want to describe the ghouls?
All of a sudden, in the middle of this match, these zombie nurses come out. I'm not even making this up.
They're all in white with white paint. They were zombie medics.
They were zombie nurses. Why? Because it's Halloween. That's why. Everybody's either dead or some type of character.
This was one of the stupidest matches that has ever been booked.
Yeah.
Cactus Jack actually bladed off of a coffin shot, a first in wrestling.
Oh, man.
Rick Steiner gets placed in the seat. Oh, sorry. The chair had to descend from the ceiling.
It descended from the ceiling, accompanied with this dramatic music that sounded like the Ric Flair theme song, like the Space Odyssey theme.
So Rick Steiner's put into the seat, and Cactus Jack climbs up the cage for the lethal lever. But then Rick Steiner delivers a belly-to-belly reversal and puts Abdullah into the seat.
But Foley is too busy playing to the crowd, so he doesn't notice. Uh-oh, my partner's in there now.
I wonder if this has ever happened to someone on death row, where the policeman or security goes to kill them with a lever and doesn't turn around to make sure that the positioning has not been reversed.
And the prisoner belly-to-bellies the guard into the seat.
Yep. Cactus Jack, not the most responsible death penalty...
Executioner,
very nice. Slams down the lever, and
boom!
True to form, like anyone who would be electrocuted, pyro shot out of the chair, and Abdullah the Butcher was butchered and murdered. How does Tony Schiavone call this lethal execution? Well, I guess he's well done.
He's gonna
unlike this match.
This is ridiculous.
This is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in professional wrestling.
This is so dumb.
And then Cactus Jack freaks out, and Abdullah sells the Chamber of Horrors by standing up and attacks Cactus Jack. No sells a death and attacks the ghouls as Schiavone says, he must have woken up and thinks he's in heaven. Wrong. He was in WCW hell. 1991 hell.
Oh, Jesus.
This is one of the worst matches I've ever seen in my life.
I have to wonder what Jim Ross was thinking as he was calling this match. And Tony, you want to call this? This is just some of the most unintentionally hilarious pro wrestling you will ever see.
So then we cut to the back. Eric Dracula Bischoff does a Dracula voice.
Hey, he makes a good Dracula.
Oh, great.
He definitely has the Dracula look. The creepy Dracula look.
And he is with Missy Hyatt in the back, and they interview the Young Pistols. Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong, who walk in, and they're asking them, who is the WCW Halloween Phantom, who we're going to see later tonight? They don't know, and they want a U.S. tag title shot against the Patriots. Boy, did we have some creative tag team names here in the early 90s. The Young Pistols and the Patriots.
Were they that bad?
In comparison to our next team, the Creatures, yeah, I guess they weren't that bad.
I just look at the Young Pistols, who were a precursor to the Smoking Guns, who didn't arrive until maybe 5 years later.
You're right. You're right. We could have
maybe three. Maybe closer.
Could
to
have
three.
Had a shoot off. The Creatures are in our next match, comprised of Creature Number One and Creature Number Two.
Yep.
Creative. Creative has nothing for these guys.
You said there are a lot of injuries. I imagine these are just two guys.
I guess
guys.
The put Creatures got the call.
Put them in a mask. There
and they came out to the theme music of Psychosis years later.
Is that right?
Yeah, that was his theme music.
Okay.
Taking on the team of Big Josh and PN News, who did a rap for us.
Yeah.
Let's listen to the rap.
Word up, it's happening. 91 will take care of business and have some fun. And when this party's over, hear the fat lady sing. Ian and Josh are the freshest when they do their thing. Yo, baby, yo, baby, yo. Yo, baby, yo, baby, yo. Yo, baby, yo, baby, yo.
PN News here with tights that read "Yo baby, yo baby, yo" on them.
That's his hit, man. That's his what's up.
They showed Christine in the audience who won the winning rap battle. That she sent in her rap lyrics to WCW Magazine.
So did she just write this PN News rap, or was it a different rap that she wrote?
I don't know. They didn't make that clear.
Well, PN News, I mean, exemplary of the old school style of hip-hop.
Yeah.
Not so much a gangster, but he's definitely a...
Imagine if this
OG
hip-hop gimmick had gone on to become the top star of the 90s in WCW, like John Cena would.
But yeah,
they missed the boat with PN News.
That's what John Cena was, a direct ripoff of PN News. Absolutely.
Bad news. PN News. It's a splash into the corner to Creature Number Two. Josh comes in and he hits a release German suplex. Then News misses a splash in the corner. Josh is just suplexing everyone, and then Josh yells, "Timber!" and hits his Northern Exposure, which was a show on Canadian television for years,
right,
starring the father of one of our colleagues.
That's correct.
Yes, yes. And this was Earthquake's finish, where he sat on his chest, and then PN News got tagged in to hit the Rapmaster Splash, and PN News and Big Josh got the win at 5 minutes and 16 seconds with a double pinfall on one of the Creatures.
Shouldn't it have been Southern Exposure? He's squashing the guy with his ass?
Yeah, you would think, or
so what,
something else.
What is this gimmick? He's a Canadian? Big Josh? What is he?
No, he was just he was a woodsman.
From up north.
Yeah, he wore maybe from the mean streets of Montana.
Right. Well, in the battle of the woodsmen's and rap stars versus the Creatures, I guess the woodsmen.
Very
rap
logical.
Stars.
Woodsman and a rap star.
Yeah. Well, where can we tie that in? How?
Maybe with.
They both like to chop up. Likes to chop up wood, the other likes to chop up tracks.
They like to cut you down
with
their words and their axes.
Okay.
Battle Axe. That could be their tag team name. I'm surprised that wasn't their team name.
Yeah.
The Battle Axes.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, when we see Van Hammer later, the rock star.
Oh, jeez.
Jim Ross pushes that the next match involves two people in the top 10 as number 7 takes on number 10, Bobby Eaton against Terrence Taylor. Terrence Taylor way, the computerized man of the 90s.
Yes, Terrence Taylor, formerly Terry, a part of...
wow, what a makeover.
A part of the, what is it, the York...
The York Foundation.
The York Foundation.
Where she took guys like Terry Taylor and Ricky Morton and rechristened them Terrence Taylor and Richard Morton.
Well, yes, yes.
I'd be Jonathan Pollock in the York Foundation.
You would be. Who, and what would I be?
You would be Wei Chung Ting.
Oh, okay. My full name. My formal name.
Yeah.
My legal name. But yes, headed by Alexander York, which many people probably know better as Marlena or Terry Runnels.
Yes. Do you know now the gimmick of why he was the computerized man of the 90s?
Tell me.
This wasn't because he was, you know, a guy on the forums or anything or a troll. But Alexandra York designed a computer program where she could input all of the skills of the opponent and she could print out a copy of, like, on the old, like, computer paper with, like, the holes at the end
of
it. Yes. The strategy that can beat any opponent. She could – it was like Game Genie.
Right.
She could find a winning strategy so Terrence Taylor could beat anyone because of this computer program.
Okay, so Terry Taylor now, with the help of technology in the form of this laptop that Alexandra York would carry with her to the ring,
yep.
Would she be doing live calculations?
At times she would on television,
okay.
Yes.
You see this laptop. It was like the size of a phone book here.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was 1991, way. It was a battle of the Five Arm versus the Alabama Jam. And Taylor sends Eaton into the barricade and then gets backdropped over the railing. They fight on the ring entrance. Of course, with WCW this time, they had the elevated ring entrance that would go straight to the ring. We saw Bobby Eaton with an atomic drop, then hits a jumping knee off of the top onto Taylor, who regained the heat later with a gut-wrench powerbomb on the ramp and then hits a splash off the top for a two count. They continue here. Eaton gets his foot up as Terry Taylor comes off the top, starts his comeback, vertical suplex, a swinging neck breaker, and then gets crotched on the top as he climbs up. And Eaton blocks the superplex, drops Taylor on the mat, and hits the Alabama Jam, which was a top rope guillotine leg drop. Got the win. 16 minutes. These two went.
These were some long matches. This was a long show. But
this might have been the best match on the show.
This was an all right match. Both guys are very technically sound. It was it's always a little hard for me to watch these older shows without, you know, much context watching
it. It is really hard to watch these shows, Wei, because these things are all scattered. And what WCW did at this time was when they released their home videos, they decided in their infinite wisdom, well, we'll put this on a 2-hour tape and we'll cut out an hour. So they'd release an edited version of the pay-per-view, but it wasn't based on quality. Like, for instance, this match, which probably was match of the night, was edited off the home video release.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why they did this, to like save on costs. Like, you would get a higher quality recording in SP, I guess, at this point.
No, all video releases would be in SP. I was wondering if the WWE did this too.
No,
I don't
remember. Included their whole pay-per-views.
And they would surely have...
Why would you buy an edited down version of a pay-per-view?
I just assume back then there's just no other way. I mean, maybe it is to save on tape costs. I have no idea.
It made it really hard, and we had to really struggle to watch this entire event in full. I wouldn't feel right not recapping the whole show, Wei.
Yes.
We would have missed, like, Van Hammer and Doug Summers.
We would have missed Oz.
Oz.
We would have missed Oz.
So who? Jim Ross, sorry, you were saying something else about this match.
No, I wasn't. I had nothing else to say.
Ross says then that Michael Hayes is injured tonight, and Jimmy Garvin is going to replace him in this next match, which is the DDT versus the left hook, as Johnny B. Badd, accompanied by Teddy Long, takes on Jimmy Garvin with Michael Hayes. I was so confused here of who was the babyface, who was the heel. Jimmy Garvin and Michael Hayes come out wearing Atlanta Braves like hats and jerseys.
Yep.
And the crowd is responding. They're doing the tomahawk chop. They are in Tennessee, which is not Georgia.
Oh, right.
So I was so confused here.
That is true.
After I was littered with comments last week about the New York Giants.
Right. But the Braves were in the World Series at the time.
Yes.
So
I don't know why the emotional connection from Chattanooga.
I don't know. How far is Tennessee?
Do neighboring states really support one another?
Tennessee doesn't have a team, do they? At the time?
No.
Maybe that's why.
Okay, they just adopted the Atlanta Braves as their own.
Maybe the Braves played in Chattanooga, for all we know.
All right. So Johnny B. Badd here. The crowd was chanting Freebirds, as Ross is noting all the injuries here.
No, better yet, why is Michael Hayes cheering for the Atlanta Braves? He's not from Atlanta, is he?
Bad Street USA.
That's That's in Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where it's based.
Whoops.
Even though Michael Hayes is actually from Philadelphia.
Oh, well, yeah.
Bad gets sent to the floor, and Hayes has his arm in a sling, punches him, and gets a big pop because he's faking an injury. I don't understand this. So the babyface faked an injury to get someone else to replace him and then did a spot revealing he wasn't really injured.
Cheating is fun as long as you're doing it to a heel.
Okay. I was very confused.
Learn that. Take that as a life lesson for anybody out there.
Well,
you can cheat as long as it's to somebody that you think is a bad guy that deserves it.
Garvin ends up hitting a DDT, which is his finish, but Teddy Long gets on the apron, distracting the referee, and this allows Johnny B. Badd to hit his left hook. Long then pushes the foot of Garvin off the rope, and Johnny B. Badd gets the win in 8:27 as Michael Hayes protests. Again, I didn't understand any of this, of what was going on. Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin, apparently the babyface is here, and Johnny B. Badd was the heel.
Yeah, just another standard match.
Missy Hyatt is in the back, still trying to find out the identity of the Phantom, and talks to Bobby Eaton as he walks by carrying a pumpkin. Hey, guys, we got this great idea for a segment. Here's a pumpkin.
Yeah. We want to tie this in to Halloween somehow. What, you guys have any ideas? How do we just make this look Halloween? Just take this. Hold on to this.
Television title action. Steve Austin, accompanied by one of his ex-wives, Lady Blossom, Jeannie Clark, taking on Dustin Rhodes, the 21-year-old Dustin Rhodes, mm-hmm. as Wade pointed out. And Dustin's grandmother was in attendance here.
Wow.
She came all the way to watch her grandson. Jim Ross notes, if I was starting a company, my number one draft pick would be Steve Austin.
Is that right?
Some great foresight here,
yeah.
from Jim Ross. I mean, it's one thing to say in hindsight that this guy had all the tools. This is documented footage in 1991,
yep.
when Austin was 2 years into the business.
Mm-hmm.
So, can't criticize there.
Was he only 2 years in?
Yeah, he was starting in 89 in Texas. They go back and forth with each countering the other constantly. Rhodes clotheslines him to the floor, which is technically illegal, as we will find out later. No over-the-top rope shenanigans in WCW during this time. Austin blocked a bulldog, and then Rhodes with a headlock on the mat. There's a 15-minute time limit in this match as they pass the 5-minute mark. Jim Ross here cut this promo, outraged at all of these managers who get involved in matches. He wants them banned. And Rhodes misses a mid-ring crossbody, crashes to the floor, and Austin attacks him and busts him open here. Rhodes gets back up and fights back with right hands. Austin blocks a monkey flip and hits a running clothesline, gets some near falls. And then Lady Blossom slaps Rhodes, and Jim Ross calls this appalling. And Dustin, in the final minute, he hits the bionic elbow, which was Dusty's big move, hits a bunch of downward elbows in the corner, gets a near fall, goes to the top of the clothesline as time expires at 15 minutes. I've got to say, for two guys relatively new to the business, they had a very strong match here going 15 minutes.
Yeah, a lot of good technical work to start off, and then just throughout the entire match working at a pace much faster than what you'd normally see on the rest of this card. Steve Austin at this time, he reminded me a lot of Dolph Ziggler today. Just not only in his look with the blonde hair and like the colorful tights, but just the way he would take these huge bumps and work in that very high-paced style. So very interesting match to watch from a historical perspective.
Then the match that Way was most looking forward to. We had Oz against Bill Kazmaier. Oz hailing from Emerald City in his green cape with stars, a young Kevin Nash.
A blonde, crew-cut Kevin Nash.
Jesus Christ. People came up with these ideas.
Oh, yeah.
This'll work.
You're 6'5", 6'7"? We're going to make you the Wizard of Oz.
I'm surprised like he didn't have a little dog to come to the ring with him as Toto.
Well, the wizard never had the dog.
Well, maybe the dog could just be finding the wizard or something. I don't know. Toto Santana.
Okay. Should have came out with, the Dorothy, the lion, and everybody.
Horrible ideas. Bill Kazmaier, the world's strongest man. You want to describe his entrance? What a gimmick this guy had
to
carry.
How could you tell that somebody is the world's strongest man? You can't just do that from looking at him.
You
gotta show it. You gotta show it by, how about when he walks out, he's carrying a giant inflatable globe on his shoulders. Well, that's what they did. A giant ball, like one of those Balzac balls. You remember those?
Yeah.
Yeah. Except
it took me a minute to, like, what is he carrying? And then when you realize it, it's like, oh, my God.
He's got the world on his shoulders.
The weight of the world on his shoulders.
That's it. Oh, man. A number of Scott Putski candidates on this show.
Oh, boy.
Among them, Bill Kazmaier.
Yeah, Bill Kazmaier. This was supposed to be Cactus Jack and Bill Kazmaier, but somehow Cactus Jack won the lottery and got out of this match. So who did they decide to go with? Kevin Nash can get a good match out of Bill Kazmaier. Oh, Kazmaier here with his limited repertoire of clotheslines and scoop slams. They did a test of strength spot that Oz actually was winning, putting Kazmaier on his knees. Awesome agent work. Jim Ross here was like, fuck this. I have my credibility at stake. Just flat out says, very elementary moves, very basic. And then Oz hit a back suplex, and Jim Ross was stunned. He said, hey, there's a good wrestling move. Crowd dead for this. Ross spent more time plugging the January 4th Tokyo Dome show for New Japan than he did this match. Kazmaier, this stunned me, was able to skin the cat.
Yeah.
Not literally. He actually pulled himself from the floor over the top rope. That, to me, was like him executing a moonsault.
The guy does have pretty strong arms.
And then he applied the torture rack after another clothesline. 3 minutes and 59 seconds. Jim Ross says, it wasn't pretty, but it was effective.
Yeah, this was a pretty terrible, terrible match. And it's just, it's amazing that they never pushed Kevin Nash as a giant, not as this, not really as Vinny Vegas either. It wasn't really until he was Diesel that he got really the giant treatment. And it's just amazing that, you know, somebody who would go on to such great success would start off with a stupid gimmick like this.
We talk about Ryback's push right now in the WWE and if he's the next Bill Goldberg. You know, on the other side of the spectrum, is he the next Van Hammer? Who was being pushed like crazy here. Ross and Schiavone get all excited, calling out to the Hammerheads. They went through like three different like Van Hammerisms here to describe the audience and saying that Van Hammer was supposed to face Michael Hayes. Ross explains Michael Hayes is injured even though he isn't really injured. Hmm. That's what he said.
Right.
Because we had already revealed that earlier in the night. So then some mysterious men in hard hats came out with jackhammers and start drilling the set as Van Hammer comes out.
Because he's got Hammer in his name.
Because he has Hammer in his name, he's a heavy metal Hammer fan. Literally.
What?
This was so stupid. I didn't understand this. He was taking on Doug Summers.
Van Hammer comes out. With the whole gimmick is he's I guess rock and roll, and Van Halen was big at the time, I suppose, and he
few years late,
yeah,
on the Van Halen train.
He comes out with a electric guitar, Flying V, unplugged, doesn't play it once, doesn't even really hold it once. He doesn't even give us an air guitar.
An air guitar.
What he does, like, I mean, he doesn't even pretend to strum it. He just poses with this thing. His big move is that he would climb on the top turnbuckle and swing the guitar around his neck.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Doug Summers, best remembered for a feud in the AWA, teaming with Buddy Rose, the late Buddy Rose, against the early days of Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels. Had a very legendary tag match that has been shown quite a lot. Doug Summers called in here to face Van Hammer, looking every bit, whatever his age was at this time. I nominated Van Hammer as the Scott Putski Award winner for this show because this guy looked insane.
Okay, well, you have that one? We'll name our winner.
All right. So Van Hammer tries to get the crowd going by stomping to the beat of We Will Rock You.
Yeah, this crowd
get
is...
it?
I do, yeah, because it's... he
Van Hammer, rock you. I don't know.
What? No, it's the rock song. He's a rock guy.
But there were a lot of meanings to this.
Crowd was dead. Crowd was completely dead until he started doing this.
This match was terrible. I thought it was worse than Oz and Kazmaier. We saw a slingshot suplex as Van Hammer pins Summers, who kicks out at two, but they just call it a three count at a minute 14. This was dreadful. Worst match of the show.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Yeah, even in a minute 14, they were able to take that honor. Yeah. Just horrendous. Then Brian Pillman cuts a promo on becoming, he's going to try and become the first WCW light heavyweight champion, dedicates this to his family and his great fans here in Chattanooga. Classic babyface promo. And then Richard Morton is with Alexandra York, says he's been a champion his whole life. And for whatever reason, online they had the actual pay-per-view version of this in some parts, and then other matches it was the WWE Classics on Demand version,
yes,
where they dubbed over Gary Michael Capetta with the most cheesy Carnival Barker-style entrance.
From Justin Roberts.
Oh, this was so weird.
Well, no, it's just because they probably had copyright music that they couldn't air.
Well, why would they have to redo the voice, though?
Because you can't separate the music from the audio in some cases.
Okay. Well, this voice was just so strange the way they did
it. It was Justin Roberts instead of Gary Michael Capetta, of course.
It was done with like some crazy like effects that added to it.
A reverb.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, sign of the night here. No need trying when you're flying Brian.
Ah, nice.
So we got Brian Pillman and Richard Morton for the vacant light heavyweight title. Nick Patrick with the referee camera intact. Maximum weight here in the division weigh 236 pounds.
236. Wow, that's
like what Cain Velasquez.
That's a heavyweight
fights at.
He would be a cruiserweight in WCW.
Very slow start here. Pillman controls him with a headlock for about 18 years. Goes for an O'Connor roll and gets a two count. Morton gets the advantage and works over the left arm and shoulder of Pillman, who then begins his comeback but gets raked in the eyes, and Morton continues working on the shoulder. So Pillman delivers a shoulder block, and both men land on the floor. Very weird spot with both selling it. And then Morton sends Pillman shoulder first into the post on the floor. Pillman goes to the top for a crossbody, pins him in 12:46, and we get the referee camera view. So you basically missed the pinfall here. And then we got replays of multiple angles, including another one from the referee camera. I was disappointed with this match. Thought it could have been better. Just a lot of stalling and rest spots here. And I don't know if Pillman legit did have an injury or if that was just part of the storyline, but it was just underwhelming.
I suppose the calculations didn't really help out Richard Morton.
No, I guess not. I guess they had a virus.
This must have been a time when, like, the world was still, like, enamored by the possibilities of computers. Like, computers could achieve anything, and this was somehow plausible that you can calculate match strategies. Now we know better.
They plug the next match and the mystery of the WCW Halloween Phantom. And the Z-Man comes out, Tom Zenk, to take on the Phantom, and Jim Ross touches on the fact that Tom Zenk is coming in at 241 pounds. He has lost 10 pounds to be quicker. And we had organ music for the Phantom, a masked man with a cape who attacks the Z-Man right away, beats the shit out of him. They do... This was awesome. Here was this masked guy that they were pushing this big reveal for later. They do a close-up of him and point out his mustache.
Well, the announcers point out the mustache.
Yes. So I was like, all right, you're kind of... Like, this close-up to me revealed who this was, but okay, maybe not everyone's like me. Then, the masked man hits a reverse neckbreaker for the win at 128. So Tony Schiavone says, you know, there's a limited amount of signature moves in this sport, and that move is known as the Rude Awakening.
Yeah.
Terrible. They are terrible.
Oh, they're just spelling it out.
Why? You're going to give people the reveal. Why spoil your own reveal?
Because they just wanted to drop a hint.
So why didn't you just say, that looks familiar? All Schiavone could have done more was, hey, that's Rick Rude's finish. That also looks a lot like Rick Rude.
And he pretty much all but said that. It did ruin the reveal towards the end, but I suppose he wanted, that was their intent, was to let people think that it was Rude.
So Way, the Phantom left, and we didn't know if we would find out. Maybe the reveal was simply going to be Tony Schiavone's blatant calling out of who it was. But I think we would get something later.
Yes.
We go on to the tag title match, and yes, injuries affecting everybody on this card, because the new challengers for Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko, known as the Enforcers, they took on the Patriots.
Wait a second. Weren't the Patriots the champions?
the U.S. tag team champions, not the world tag team champions.
Oh.
They had U.S. versions of their champions as well.
So this was a champion-champion unification?
Not a unification match, just the U.S. tag champions getting a shot at the tag champions.
Okay.
And they were consisting of Todd Champion, who was, I don't know. What was his gimmick, Wei?
Okay, he's a special forces soldier who had just come back from Desert Storm.
Oh, okay. Teaming with Firebreaker Chip, a fireman.
Who's a fireman? Who does a lot of steroids.
Hailing from WCW Special Forces is where these two come
from.
Yeah. I guess Firebreaker Chip may be a nominee.
That's my candidate.
Wow. Firebreaker Chip.
Yep.
Well, the match began. They wore down Todd Champion. This, like, it looked like a squash match on Saturday night, this match. This whole show barely felt like a pay-per-view with some of these matches.
Completely, completely. And maybe that's why it was so hard getting through it, because I was just so unfamiliar with all these guys. It was like watching, okay, like half the side of the ring would be somebody who's well known, like Larry Zbysko, Arn Anderson, and the other side would be just these jobbers. Firebreaker Chip.
Why do you assume Firebreaker Chip is a jobber, Wei?
Just
because he has a job outside of wrestling?
I don't anticipate Firebreaker Chip heading into the WWE Hall of Fame anytime soon. That's all I'm saying.
Anderson attacks the leg of Todd Champion and keeps him in the heel corner. He tries to fight back. He goes for an atomic drop as Anderson makes a tag and Zbysko attacks Champion from behind. I thought the baby faces were just, they were such goofs in this match. Like, just outsmarted at every turn by the heels. Chip gets the hot tag, hits a scoop slam, some drop kicks. Zbysko breaks up a fall. Then all four get into the ring. Chip crashes into Zbysko and then turns around and takes a spine buster. And the enforcers get the win at 9:52. As Tony Schiavone notes, the spine buster, always an exciting move.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
Highlight reels, 450, corkscrew planches, the spine buster.
Well, come on.
Because it busts the spine.
Yeah, it does. It's terrible. This guy, Todd Champion, what did he go on to do anything?
Nothing.
He was just like your typical big man, muscular guy who couldn't wrestle at all.
And Firebreaker Chip.
What happened to him?
Nothing. Jim Ross.
He won the Scott Putski Award, I'm hoping.
Well, we'll see. We might have to debate this at the end. Jim Ross says, "We are having a great time." I question that statement. And then Bischoff is on the ramp, and he brings out Paul E. Dangerously with news that he says will shock WCW to its core. And he comes out with Medusa and cuts a promo on the WCW committee, taking him off of commentary because he is too controversial and outspoken. And he declares war on WCW, stating that he still has a manager's license and wants to bankrupt the company. And he says that he is going after Sting first, their prized talent.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings out the Masked Phantom.
At some point he made some joke here about Tony Schiavone. Did you catch that? He was saying how Jim Ross couldn't say it. Neither could Tony Schiavone. He was probably too busy watching the World Series backstage. Was this some inside reference?
Maybe Schiavone was more interested in the baseball game than Halloween Havoc.
Well, that's his true calling, as we've come to realize.
So the Halloween Phantom comes out, takes off his mask, and it is Ravishing Rick Rude wearing Rick Rude tights.
No.
You see this?
Did he change his tights?
He had like the airbrush tights on that Rick Rude would always wear. And this was after Rude had left the WWF earlier that year because of money problems. Rude had injured himself, and the WWF continued to advertise him at all of the house shows. But instead, Rude didn't get a payoff for the shows he was advertised for. So the WWF falsely advertised him. Then the show would happen where people presumably bought tickets because he was in the main event. And then they wouldn't pay Rude a percentage of the house, saying, oh, you didn't work the show. It's like, yeah, but you advertised me. So they got into this big back and forth, and it ended up, I believe, in a lawsuit as well. And Rude left the company over it.
Hmm.
And then after he left the company, WWF continued to advertise Rick Rude.
Is that right?
Yeah. Slimy business at this point, Wei.
Yeah, I guess so.
So Rude coming to WCW. And Rude says, I only care about myself, my women, and my money. Looking at Heyman and Medusa. And Heyman was the money.
Yes.
Medusa was the woman. says that he brought up here, Sting looks small on television, and he is coming after his United States title. And then Schiavone calls this the biggest news story of the year in WCW. The biggest story of the year, Way.
What was the actual biggest story of 1991?
Ric Flair leaving the company.
Oh.
That would be my biggest story of the year.
Yeah.
And then Jim Ross says, this was the most awkward exchange. Well, Tony, you can't deny the fact that they made their intentions very clear tonight. And Schiavone just looks at him. Very clear, Jim. Very clear. Just like these two hated each other.
Man.
The dissension here was whether it was actual or not, came across extremely awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we got a video of Ron Simmons training for his match tonight, and that takes us to our main event. 2 out of 3 falls match. Lex Luger defending the WCW title against Ron Simmons. Dusty Rhodes in the corner of Simmons, while Harley Race and Mr. Hughes are in the corner of Lex Luger. And do you want to describe Luger's entrance coming out? With the word Luger plastered across the entrance in block letters.
Okay, I missed it.
Someone watched this in 2011 and thought, hey, let's get the Miz some block letters.
It was
that
like
read
that?
Awesome.
Like inflatable letters?
These weren't inflatable. They were one-dimensional.
Really? Wow.
Telltale for Lex Luger. And Nick Patrick sends Mr. Hughes to the back. Ross gives us the weigh-in results. Luger coming in here at 286, down from his usual fighting weight of 292. Would those 6 pounds have a significant effect late in the match, Way?
Probably not.
I just love how the guy who had to call Oz and Bill Kazmaier is now getting across the sporting aspect of this.
Yeah.
The creatures.
Hey, he tried hard. Ron Simmons, at what point in his main event title run was he? Or sorry, main event run, period. Like, at what point did they decide to go with Ron Simmons?
92, they put the title on him. So this was prior to that. Very slow start here. Simmons had some power spots and then hit the Dominator at 453 for the first fall. And then they go into their corners.
It was a spine buster. Or, sorry, a power slam and then a spine buster.
Yeah, but they'd later call this the Dominator.
It didn't do it. It wasn't a spine buster, though.
I didn't say it was a spine buster. You did.
Yeah, but it was. He did a spine buster.
Spine buster, you got a twist. This was just lifting him and dropping him.
Okay.
I'm not accusing it of being the most exciting move in wrestling, the spine buster.
Well, I'll tell you what it wasn't. The Attitude Adjustment, which is the name of Lex Luger's finishing move.
The Attitude Adjustment.
Yeah, the AA.
The AA. Well, in the second fall way, they discussed the lower back issues that Luger may have had. And do you want to describe how they booked the second fall here? Where Simmons was against the ropes, Luger ran at him.
Yeah.
Harley Race grabbed the foot of Simmons. Somehow Luger fell over top of him, and they ruled this a DQ. And Luger got the fall because Simmons somehow offensively threw him over the top rope.
Yes. And I suppose back then, it's not a rule that's been enforced in probably 20 years, but you can't throw somebody over the top rope. So this was a way for Luger and the heels to get a win without actually pinning the guy, which I thought was a clever way for a heel to win.
Yes, I enjoyed the exchange here between Dusty and...
Dusty was great. They gave him 60 seconds in between pinfalls to recuperate, and so they basically did like, you know, boxing-style corner cams, where they would cut, first of all, to Harley Race, who would say nothing of substance whatsoever, and then they would cut to Dusty Rhodes, who was perhaps the greatest corner man, the greatest semblance of a corner man that I've ever seen in any sport. He is just fantastic.
They also, at one point during, this was before the DQ fall, they had Dusty on the floor and he yelled at the referee, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And then they cut over to Harley as the referee, I guess, broke them up. And Harley just goes, "Jesus Christ! You're allowed to count to 10. I just enjoyed Harley with his grovel yelling, "Jesus Christ." And then we went into the third and final fall way. And what happened here?
Well,
whose attitude was adjusted?
Simmons gets a bit of a comeback, and that's when the crowd really comes alive. He starts to kind of do like a hulking up gimmick.
Gets a superplex for two. JR at this point is doing his usual JR stick, ramping up the excitement, doing a fantastic job. It's really nice to hear JR, you know, back around this era. And
he, I very much enjoyed on this show.
He was great. Yeah, he taking it probably even more seriously than he would take things in the Attitude Era. But then Simmons mounts a number of comebacks. But eventually, kind of out of nowhere, Lex just hits his pile driver, which he calls the Attitude Adjustment, for the pinfall. And that was it.
So there we go. That was Halloween Havoc 1991.
Yeah.
Lex Luger retains the title.
Yes. Yes. Was this a big deal at all at the time? Like, my point was, had Ron Simmons main evented any shows prior to this?
I don't believe so, no. Okay. So they were pushing him here, and eventually he would get the title.
Well, as for this show in its entirety, there's nothing too terrible. Like, there were terrible things, but they were at least somewhat enjoyable because of the campiness of these gimmicks, of the match types. For me, though, I will say this show was particularly hard to get through just because of the length of it and because the style in general was just a very kind of old school, slower pace. So, yeah, those are my thoughts.
Got a lot of just squash matches.
A lot of filler. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of filler. Yep. The Scott Putski Award way, I'm leaning towards Van Hammer. You, I guess, are going a different direction.
Yes, I don't know. Van Hammer's kind of tall. He's built for a tall guy, but I mean,
dude, this guy looked crazy. But you're going with who?
I'm going to Firebreaker Chip.
Wow.
Why don't we rock paper scissors for the winner of the Scott Putski Award?
Well, if we're going rock, then we have to lean Van Hammer. Okay, here we go.
All right.
Best 2 out of 3 in right. Ron Simmons Lex Luger
yes,
style.
We will. Okay. And no DQs.
Okay.
One.
Oh, wait. Let's get.
We
got to
call out for audio purposes. We got to call out. Wait, what we have?
Okay. One, two, three.
Paper.
Scissors. Oh, so that's 1-0.
You get 1-0.
Rock.
1-0 for Van
paper.
Hammer.
Scissors.
Rock.
Ooh.
Go.
We're going to the third and final fall.
Here's my attitude adjustment, John.
Okay, here we go.
Ready? One,
rock,
two,
paper.
Rock.
Scissors again. Jesus Christ.
Hey, there you go. Congratulations.
Firebreaker Chip.
Congratulations to Firebreaker Chip.
Wow. Settled like everything should be with a game of rock, paper, scissors.
There we go.
Okay, let's head on over to the feedback right now.
What do you give this show?
Oh, God. There was some real camp on this show, which I can't dismiss because I do get a kick out of these things rather than it just being boring. I'll give this a 3 out of 10.
I'll give this a 4.
A 4?
Yeah.
Wow. There you go. You don't have to see this show, folks, unless you want to laugh for a little bit.
The Chamber of Horrors is kind of
that's a match
funny.
Everyone should see.
Yeah, at least watch the finish. It's the dumbest thing you'll ever see.
Okay, first bit of feedback here. I remember watching this pay-per-view at my friend's house and thinking, when is RoboCop going to come out and bend the bars already? It was the first WCW pay-per-view I had ever watched and really relied heavily on my friends to keep me updated on who was who and what the story was behind the massive cage around the ring. It was by far, flat out, the stupidest match I have ever seen in my entire life.
Mm. All right, let's go to the franchise who says, the worst match of all time not involving Chavo Guerrero. I still can't believe this shit took place. Okay, this the franchise thinks this is a different match. He's saying RoboCop. This is a little awkward then.
Did this guy even watch the show?
I don't know. I think he thinks maybe this was the RoboCop show.
We've done the RoboCop show.
All right, I'm going to skip you.
All right.
Corey Ferreira says, what the fuck was that Chamber of Horrors match? The match was fucking awful. It's one of them wrestle crap specials like the Kennel from Hell match. Besides that, we do get a few decent matches on the show. Eaton versus Taylor was a really solid match, as was the Austin versus Rhodes TV title match. Despite what people think of Austin's style from the later half of his career, he was quite the worker. Same goes for Rhodes. Lastly, the main event between Luger and Simmons is good as well. It's hard to believe Luger had a good match without being carried by Flair. Simmons was a good worker, but I never saw him as a guy who could carry someone else. This show features not one but three matches rated in the negative star range from Dave Meltzer.
Louis from Montreal says, I love seeing Eric Bischoff in a straight role. It was refreshing to get a break from his persona that we would use for the rest of his career. Also great to hear Jim Ross on commentary. He says here he only watched up until the end of the Chamber of Horrors match. Says, I liked it. It was WCW trying to Americanize a Japanese death match.
No.
At the time, this was different. It was a hardcore match before ECW and before the Attitude Era. It was a hardcore match wrapped in a gimmick match, and it was great. The referee camera was innovative and pretty cool. I loved Abdullah being fried and pretending to be dead. The pyro was great. Jim Ross's comment, I don't see anyone rushing in to give him mouth to mouth. It's Halloween. Enjoy it. 23 minutes into this pay-per-view, and I give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Jesus.
Yeah, I.
As long as there's people like that out there, you can pretty much come up with anything and package it as gold when it's failing like shit.
They did have Mick Foley in this, who is a veteran of these Japanese.
Oh yeah, this
matches.
Is probably the second most well-remembered cage match he was in.
Absolutely. Finally. Not much feedback for this show.
Well, this is an obscure one.
Alan Gaynor says, I have fond memories of this period of time in WCW's history. After a few years of only being able to catch an hour of their programming each week, Roger started to carry TBS on WGN the month before this event, and all of a sudden my Saturdays were full. Unfortunately, my enthusiasm for it was somewhat diminished by this show. It's a shame that Abdullah never made an appearance in the WWE, where he could have been billed as the most electrified man in sports entertainment. Van Hammer, Firebreaker Chip, PN News, Oz. I was half expecting to see R.D. Reynolds' name in the end credits. As bad a show as this was, there was good stuff to be found shortly afterwards. Ricky Steamboat would return the next month. Vader would be given a prominent role. Jushin Liger would debut, as would Steve Williams and Terry Gordy. Better times were on the horizon. But this pay-per-view itself is akin to getting home on Halloween night and finding nothing but apples and toothbrushes in your bag.
Well, thank you, everyone, who watched this show and endured it. Halloween Havoc 1991 is not one of the more well-remembered shows, unless you're sick. But, hey, someone liked the Chamber of Horrors match.
8 out of 10.
There you go. For a 23-minute, 3-hour pay-per-view.
You know what? If I only watched that portion, I'd probably give it about the same.
All right. That's going to wrap us up for this week, everyone. So, once again, thanks for tuning in. Next week, Wei, we are going to be going back in time to November the 3rd of 1997. What happened on that date?
What an obscure episode. Why?
That is the episode of Raw leading into a little pay-per-view known as the 1997 Survivor Series.
Isn't it odd where we're doing the Raw but not the pay-per-view?
That is a little odd because in 2 weeks, Wei, we are going to be in Montreal.
Yeah, and?
We are going to review the 1997 Survivor Series inside of Montreal, maybe at the Bell Center.
Oh, wow.
Maybe we'll do it outside the Bell Center.
Maybe we'll go into the locker room, like the where Brett punched Vince.
Yeah, and maybe we can we'll do a video blog of just shooting the hallway.
Yes.
And you can limp down the hallway to reenact.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and you can shove my camera away.
So Survivor Series 97 in 2 weeks' time, live. Live from Montreal.
And you don't know who will join us. We may have a champion on that show.
Okay. I have no idea what you're referring to, but I will be kept in suspense. But next week, the go-home show to Survivor Series 97, the November 3rd edition of Monday Night Raw.
Okay. So we're going back November 3rd, 97 Raw. That's coming up next week. In the meantime, lots of stuff you can check out. The Law from this past Sunday featuring Chris Jericho and Dave Meltzer together on the show. You can grab that off of iTunes as well by subscribing to Live Audio Wrestling. Review a Raw from this past Monday night and the fallout from the big angle at the end of the show. And then, of course, we are back with Review and Impact. Oh, this week. Yeah, we still don't know what's happening this week with Review and Impact because me and Wei have to leave the province for a day on Thursday, and it's going to be rather tough. So keep it posted here at liveaudiowrestling.com and on Twitter, and we should have an update on Thursday if we are able to do a show this week or not. But our schedules are a little mental for this next couple of weeks.
We'll try our best.
We will try our best. All right, that's all for us, everyone. Follow Wei at Wei0937 at IamJohnPollock on Twitter, liveaudiowrestling.com, Law Message Board, all that good stuff. And we've got some music to go out with here. And Wei, what is a song that is worthy of following Halloween Havoc 1991 and the Chamber of Horrors? Is there a song that really stands out that would be worthy? I mean, it's Halloween today. What's a Halloween song that you enjoy?
Oh, Halloween song that I enjoy. Well,
My favorite Halloween song, of course, is...
How about we type in Thriller Remix and see what comes up?
All right.
Let's get the most fucked up version of Thriller, because there's got to be some out there.
Okay.
Can you hear this?
This is pretty fucked up.
All right. Let's bring the volume up on this as we say goodbye. Lurking in the